Hello.
Industry Tactics. Hello and welcome back to Industry Tactics. I'm your loyal host, Friendly Rich. We're syndicating every Monday at noon on CFRU in Guelph, Ontario, Canada. Thank you to CFRU for the support. And on the podcast today, none other than Leah Hennessy, based out of New Orleans, and about to release a new EP called Before, During, Still, an amazing and really vulnerable reflection on the pandemic and where we go from here. So enjoy it. This is my time. I've known Leah since, 2018, and is currently the interim executive director at the Music Box Village, a very special place in New Orleans, and wish Leah the very best with this new release. And it was a lovely chat. This is episode 178, my chat with Leah Hennessy. Enjoy. With the great Leah Hennessy. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here with you. It's great to see you.
Likewise. It's a hoot. And you were just in, if you're listening in real time, you were just in Boston. Is that right?
I was just in Boston, indeed. Yeah.
What was going on?
Well, you know, I used to live in Boston. I was up there for about 11 years and studied music up there and have a band called The By and By.
And yeah, nice name.
Thank you. We just put out a record March 1st.
You gotta love that.
Yeah, we played our record release show together last Saturday.
Oh, How special was that?
It was really special. It's been a long time coming with this record for us. Mm-hmm. We recorded it in February of 2020, right before the pandemic lockdown.
Oof.
Tough timing. One of those things where I think we got all of the dubbing done in 2020 and the masters back in 21, but then what were you going to do with it? You know, because we weren't going to play.
Welcome to Industry Tactics, Leah Hennessy. So what did you do? We're here to do it. So you sat on it. You had to sit on it.
We sat on it. Yeah. Yeah. And fortunately, I think, you know, everything turned out the way it should have. We got picked up by a great label out of New York.
There you go.
Autoropa Records, and they've been really helpful just like pulling the thing across the finish line. So
nice to hear. And I'd like to think that it finds its place and you release it when it needs to be released. And so it's just part of the story that you're not sitting on it. It's not going stale. It's maturing.
Yeah, I mean I'm proud of how it sounds. It was always going to come
out.
You know, like, so it's going to come out. I have to say that, you know, the name of the record is Time Slips Away.
Yeah.
That was not as funny of a joke when we decided to name it that. It's actually taken from a lyric in a song I wrote because we like to use a lyric to name the record. And, so we had decided it would be called that in 2021. And then, jokes on us. It's like we just
jokes
set ourselves
on all of us.
Up, you know?
Yeah. No, we're all laughing together. It's okay. It's okay. Jokes on all of us. Yeah. Exactly. Well, let's play a track. Chef's Choice. We're going to dive right in.
Great.
Set up a tune that we can hear here from the new record.
Why don't we listen to, because I just, now I'm having a hard time deciding. Let's listen to Aberdeen, the last track on the record.
Great. We're time traveling. We're starting at the end.
Yeah, starting at the end.
Beautiful. Here it comes. Aberdeen from their new record, Time Slips Away.
Aberdeen, Aberdeen, I knew you so well. Though your grace is far behind me, and my word is shot to hell. It's a pity to remember, it's a fault to forget. Aberdeen, Aberdeen, I don't know you yet. Aberdeen, Aberdeen, where it once was so near. I put sea and sky between us just to try and disappear. Oh, I'd set the story straight, what is false and what is fear. Aberdeen, Aberdeen, my song is sincere. Aberdeen, I can't let you win. There's nothing left to say here, so silence immense. How does story sit straight? How does jagged learn to lean? Aberdeen, Aberdeen, unfortunate.
Beautiful track. So you got back together with your bandmates. Tell us about that track, if you can, a little bit, just reflecting on, I don't know, memories of recording it or maybe even playing it last weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually had you play that one because we've been playing it for a while, and yeah, it's the only track on the new record that has just the trio, mandolin, upright bass, and voice. The rest of the record has drums, an organ, and accordion. But we were that trio, the three-piece, for a very long time. And that song, Aberdeen, was in our... It's a tune I wrote, maybe even 8 years ago.
Okay.
maybe 10. And we played it for a long time, and it kept growing and evolving in this really beautiful way. It's actually on our first record. But in the time between recording the first and wanting to go back in the studio for the second, it had changed so much. And so we were like, let's record Aberdeen again. It's like, it's something different now, you know? And it was such a treat to play it on Saturday too.
Oh, nice.
Really nice. Lovely. We grow with it, you know?
How do you, how does the group come to be? Like it feels like a bit of a coming home in a way, but like, how does that work in your musical path? Like, how do you get to Jacob and Brad? How do you three connect?
We all went to New England Conservatory of Music.
There you go.
Up in Boston. And we were all in a program there called Contemporary Improvisation. And the thing about the CI program at that time, it may have changed a little bit, but at that time, they would get people in who a lot of times were master's students. And they had already studied in a tradition that had a language for improvisation. So my year that I started with my graduate cohort, it was like a Panamanian woman who sang gospel. She'd grown up in the church and she did that. And there was an Iranian guy who played Persian classical music on oud. And then there was like a bluegrass banjo player and a bluegrass fiddler. And then I had studied jazz voice, and that was true for Brad and Jacob too in their own years. And so we brought a lot of our personal background to bear. I grew up singing in the church in Charleston, South Carolina, where I'm from. And
there we
so
go.
There's some gospel stuff in there that I get to go into, or spiritual stuff. Nice. And then Brad is from Texas, where he kind of got into Mississippi Delta blues and, some of the stuff that trickled down and around towards Dallas way, a little bit of country too. And, Jacob is from Laramie, Wyoming, and his dad is a well-known banjo player there in Wyoming. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he grew up playing bluegrass. His sister also plays group bluegrass and has been, she's with Molly Tuttle's Golden Highway right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Talented family. And
Yeah. So we all met at New England Conservatory, where we were being pushed to develop our own artistic voices with all of this tradition, you know.
So you formed it. You formed it while you were there?
Right after we left.
Cool.
Yeah. Right after we left.
And it's what, a 2-year program?
Two.
So I'm all over the place. I should have started in South Carolina, but it's too late. We're in Boston. How did that change your musical path going to New England Conservatory?
I've been studying music since I was really in sixth grade. I went to a performing arts middle in high school. So I guess my junior year in high school, I decided I wanted to go to music school, and that's where I wanted to be. And so in that sense, music has been a daily part of my life.
Nice.
It feels really natural for me. Conservatory for me was about, the first time around, it was really about jazz voice and like learning repertoire and ear training and the things that you do in music school. But when I went back for that master's, what I thought was really special about the program was that we were being encouraged to improvise without like the safety net of the changes and to really do that in a free improvisation way and check it out from this perspective or that perspective. And like, we had a whole seminar that was on playing duo and it was great. It was beautiful to just like make mistakes and feel no pressure or burden of failure. Just keep exploring. I had a really beautiful graduate experience there. And I started curating my first events there too. It was just kind of wide open.
What were those like some of your first?
I did a lot of things bringing together visual artists and musicians, sometimes filmmakers too. The first one was kind of like a art night market meets like a film screening meets a concert type thing. And it was all sort of feeding into each other.
Wow.
And that was the first thing I had produced by myself. And then the next thing I did was called In Response. And it was visual artists meeting up with musicians to share their current portfolios.
Oh, wow.
And then to create a new piece of work based on what they found in the other's portfolio.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah. So creating with a stimulus or an input from a different discipline.
This has always been kind of part of your practice. If you could look back on it now, you go like, oh, yeah, that totally makes sense. But back then it was probably, I mean, fun to look back and time travel a little bit on that in that sense, right? Because, you know, it's weird to think that the DNA is there, right? Like, that's a freaky thought. That just came to me now. Friendly Rich signing off. This has been fantastic. It is interesting to think that it's all there. You're just kind of, I guess, refining it, getting better acquainted with it, with all of it. But you have the kind of, I don't know, I'm not saying don't work on it every day. It sounds like you do. I don't know. There's no question there. We're going to have to work around it.
Yeah, I think I tend to be one of those people, and not everybody is this way, but I tend to be one of those people that that believes that all things can become happy accidents, you know, it can be like a matter of framing. Nice. And, you know, it all kind of works itself in there somehow, you know, like my first job out of undergrad was for a for-profit educational theater company.
Okay.
Which those words don't really make sense together. the for-profitness of it and the
good
like
luck. Yeah.
But it was run by like a 2-time Tony Award-winning producer.
Okay.
And she was cutthroat, man. She would not hesitate to cancel those kids' field trip if we had not sold enough tickets. So
true for profit.
Yeah. And I was an event coordinator. And I started off by calling theaters around the company and like around the country rather, and getting information for the company on like, how many seats are you? Like, what does it cost to have your lighting tech? And so all of that stuff became part of my vocabulary, and I didn't think I'd use it for a really long time. But then when I started working across disciplines with artists back in grad school, there were some visual artists who were super big into the Fluxus thing that were like right down the street from us. And so we're all kind of like collaborating. And so when I started doing that, I was like, oh, I know how to do these other things. I know how to book a room. I know how to, you know, make that happen.
I love that. Like, because some of that stuff you learn in school, maybe even by accident, but then like developing that muscle outside of school when it starts really feeling like real life or whatever this is that we're doing.
Yeah.
Now, it is a fascinating thing, right? Like you just develop this confidence and these chops that are not normal. Like if you look back, if you're like, if you spend any time with like kids in the high school, which I know you do, it's just like that stuff doesn't. It's not a slam dunk. Those aren't natural abilities. It's almost equal to learning the instrument.
Yeah.
Is like all that stuff, whatever, soft skills, whatever the heck you want to call it, around supporting yourself as an artist and getting out and having fun with it. I think that's part of the art form. Which you clearly, I mean, so you have a lot of that in your toolkit, I see. So like so you leave New England Conservatory. When do you end up going to New Orleans? When does that happen?
I moved in 2016. So it'll be 8 years this September.
Wow. It feels like home now, right? It's got to.
Yeah, definitely.
You've been through a lot now. Your New Orleans story has chapters in it.
It does. I feel like I've been different versions of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, in a really profound way, like maybe I didn't feel it so markedly in Boston, or maybe it was just divided by school. I don't know. But
yeah.
I mean, you know, but they, the way it is down here is like, I'm still new in town to some folks and sure. I probably always will be, but yeah, 8 years is starting to feel really pretty good.
Wow. What, can you talk a little bit about your relationship with the city and how it's kind of helped shape who you are now as an artist, as a human?
Yeah. You know, I think so much of my experience in New Orleans has been heavily shaped by New Orleans Airlift and the Music Box Village, where I'm the creative director and current interim executive director. thank you.
I didn't know that. That's we're learning it here. We're learning things, new things about you here today. That's what we wanted to do, right? Great.
I love it.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's exciting
thank
to hear.
Thank you. I mean, what Airlift has done for over a decade now is bring together artists across different disciplines, people who are cultural workers who maybe don't self-identify as an artist, although, you know, the creativity in New Orleans is just seeping out everywhere. It's really, it's profound. It's not in an institution. So in that sense, it's completely the opposite of Boston, where art was first institutionalized in America, you know?
Is that a thing? Is that for real?
That is for real. Yeah.
In what, like, what's an example? Like Berkeley?
Conservatories, or? Places like New England Conservatory and Symphony Hall, the orchestra, the American orchestras, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So in you've that seen sense, it from both angles. Yeah.
And so I got here and unfortunately, you know, these folks who had been here for a little while and knew a lot of people took me in quickly.
Yeah.
And I got to work on some amazing collaborative projects, and that's really shaped who I am here now. I didn't dive into making music here right away, even though I think I walked in with a little bit of like, well, I have a jazz background. I should be able to sit in and
this makes sense. Yeah.
And I did. I pushed myself a little bit my first and second year to go down to Frenchman Street and sit in with people like Aurora Nealand and Russell Welch and other folks. And they were all super nice to me, but I didn't know the right repertoire.
Okay.
Like the standards that I had learned were a little bit later. They were from like 40s and 50s and had a little bit of this bebop thing to them.
Yeah.
And you know, the trad jazz thing is like the teens and the 20s and a little bit of the 30s. And so, it was hard. And I learned some tunes and I stuck it out. And then I was like, this is actually just not what my music here is. You know,
and that's okay. Yes.
And it's okay. And it's
to figure that out is big, right? Yeah.
I did at that time, I didn't know what my music here was.
Right.
But I knew that if I kind of kept doing what I was doing and meeting collaborators and seeing how other musicians navigated the landscape here and meeting, you know, artists of other disciplines too, that I would find it.
What an education though, eh? Like it's.
Yeah.
Like I see what you've been up to and just all that you've just taken in from that, from your work with Airlift alone is just like, let alone just being in the city and taking in the rest. I mean, it's so rich and not just about, I'm glad you mentioned that about like finding your music or who, your place in there. Like it's, you know, So you're leaning a little bit on the stuff, I guess, that you were picking up at New England Conservatory too. It makes its way over there as well. It's still with you.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, right? This is all a part of who I am. It's all in the toolkit, you know?
Yeah. It's beautiful. You know, I've been kind of freaking out over this really lame idea. But it still fascinates me that look, I listen to your music and we're going to listen to more of it in a minute. And it's like, only you can make that. Like it's so, that's so beautiful to me. Like it kind of is the notion that we're all special snowflakes and we kind of are. And that's what I'm saying. It's a very lame idea, But it's beautiful too. I'm fascinated by it, that all of that experience you bring, all of your everything that you carry to a piece of music is genuinely, distinctly you, that never been done before, never will be done again the same way, even if AI has something to do with it. Maybe AI will change the landscape there, but I'd like to think that it's got that special stamp. That'll get back to the DNA idea there. And beautiful stuff. Now you're releasing, now it feels like this year is big for you. I might be misreading it, but 2024, you've already released one record that you that we just discussed, and another one's coming. And totally, it feels totally different. Shows another side of you musically, the whole thing, right? Can you talk a little bit about that piece, that this solo record that's coming?
Absolutely. I mean, I also feel really excited. So I feel like this year has started off with a bang, and some things are moving that were once stuck.
Okay.
So
Good.
the EP that's coming out is titled Before, During, Still. And
Cool,
it's four
cool.
four songs. And those songs were written largely in 2020 and 2021.
Yeah.
I had a friend during lockdown time who wanted to do a song a day practice. Are you familiar
Oh
with
yeah.
this? Yeah,
There's.
okay. So we did a song a day. We did like 1 week, and then we took some time off, and then we did another week, and
Yeah. Yeah.
it was just it felt incredible, actually.
Wow.
I was one of those people that I was laid off from my job. I don't have kids. I was not with a partner at that time. It was just me in
Yeah.
my house. And this songwriting practice, I've been a songwriter, but the structure of being like, well, this is what I'm doing today
Yeah. Yeah.
really grounded me and gave me something to work on those days. And then I had a community to share with. There was like three or
Right
four of
on.
us that were doing it together.
Wow.
So, so
Wow.
I guess a year ago, 2022 into 23, was starting to play some of those songs out. And
Yeah.
it was like, okay, let's record these four and get them out there. And there will be more, but
Great. Great.
That's
Great.
it.
I just spoke to another artist, Tor Lukasik Foss, nearby here in Hamilton, Ontario, and he said he's been working on these little chunks of four. Little building blocks of maybe that's I don't know. There is something there of like. Anyway, I love this. I love this little, like, I don't know what that is. It's not an album. It's a new little, he called them, he had a term for it. I
Oh, really? I'm
mini,
curious.
I'll dig it up. Mini releases. That interview hasn't come out yet, but mini releases or something. I love the idea because it's anyway, how are you bringing those tunes to life when you're first playing them live? Because they're the production is so I'm just interested. How did that translate?
When we were playing them live, I had a mini log synth that I was using. I had a looper pedal for my voice. My friend and partner at the time, Yamil Rodriguez, was playing TR-8, the pull like Roland TR-8 drum machine, and some live percussion, but it was like cymbals and shakers and a glockenspiel and just like whatever we had, and then a bass synth and a bass guitar from Bodhi Landa. And so it was
Wow.
stripped down. It was stripped down. We didn't
Sounds
have a whole
fun though.
lot of like
Yeah.
sequencing happening. And that's my jazz background coming to bear, right? Like, this is the first record I've ever made where, yeah, we had sketches because we had played them live, but a lot of that we did build in the studio. And everything else I'd done before that had been like, the band comes in, the band has rehearsed the arrangement. We're going to record it now, and maybe you'll like plug in a few overdubs.
It's a little more traditional in terms of the construction of it.
Right, 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 right. You're not building in the recording space. And the new EP, like, we did some initial tracking, and the person I'd done that with left for the summer and left me the files. So then I did some tracking on my own and Logic. Wow. And, you know, it's got some of it is a slightly more polished than Bedroom Vibe, but it's got, it's lo-fi, you know?
Yeah.
And then I ended up finishing it up with a different engineer. So that too was like a little bit of a process, but I was learning, you know, it was my first time out.
Oh, it's so, so fun. And again, it brings me back to, I love how different it is. It shows a totally different side of who you are artistically, but it's still very much you. Let's hear a track from, this time, not Chef's Choice. Let's hear Decorate. This is from Before, During, Still.
Jasmine will be blooming soon, and when it does, I'll think of you. I've got a mind to grow my own, see if I feel less alone. Sun and sage, my fears assuage, but this garden's just a gilded cage. To stay at home shouldn't be a trial, still I think it'll be a while. Your garden grow.
does your garden grow?
Well, okay, so that's decorate. What a, I mean, epic. What's going on? I mean, it's pretty obvious what's going on. This track is, it's beautiful. It's hopeful. It's got the orchestration on it is amazing. The adventure you take us on, and it clearly has pandemic. It's got there's a lot in there, eh? Like emotionally, like was that from the Song a Day?
Yeah, that was from the Song a Day, and was maybe the second or third day. So
damn you, Leah Hennessy, writing that. You don't know. You're come on, Song a Day. Anyway,
we plant the
seeds in a day, but yes, that's a journey. What a journey.
It grew quite a bit, but
yes, so beautiful.
Yeah. The prompt that day was decorate, and, decorate is actually one of my favorite Brian Eno oblique strategy cards too.
Nice.
The only one that overtly refers to the pandemic, and it doesn't say like, I'm not singing.
No.
COVID-19.
I'm not. I'm not. Let's not be ashamed of the fact that we made art through a global health pandemic. It's a thing of beauty that you did this, and yeah, you, sure, not hitting us over the head with it, but it is fascinating. And I remember when that was going down. I think I had a few talks with you folks, with Jay Pennington. Go back and listen to that episode. That's on, I'm not going to dig the number up for you, but there are a few of our mutual friends and colleagues who were doing a lot of reflection on what it means to be an artist going through this. And I know we all had a hard time swimming through whatever the hell that was. And I think we're starting to, like, that's what's kind of beautiful about it, is that this moment now where we're all a little more, I'm definitely a little more, what's the word, grizzled. these reflections on whatever the hell that was coming out now, a few years later, is kind of equally fascinating, right? The art comes out, and I think we knew it back then. Like, there was many people were calling that it's going to, it's not going to all be immediate, like in the moment. In fact, a lot of what was happening in the moment was trash, right?
You could do is just be there. I mean,
yes.
Do you know the author George Saunders? Are you familiar with his work at all?
No.
He's written some great books. In fact, I would highly recommend this one called Lincoln and the Bardo, which is like a retelling of like Lincoln's death, but has this like strange speculative fiction ghost aspect to it. Anyway, George Saunders, I listened to a podcast pretty early on, an interview he'd done, and his advice to his students and to anybody listening was to just write down what was happening. And he kind of meant that on like a global scale, but also a local scale, and also internally.
Yeah.
And that he, you know, it's just like, you will not be able to make art from this for a long time.
Interesting.
All you can do is just witness the moment and show up for it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I found that very inspiring and started a pretty much daily journaling practice.
Oh, damn.
That I'm just now beginning to like really go through.
Love it.
20 books later.
You posted the other day on social, and that was beautiful and fascinating. Like, it's so you're clearly still digesting, making sense of it, figuring that out.
Yeah. And once I got into it, I was, you know, I just kind of had instinctively labeled the first one that I was already in pre-COVID, and the first next one was COVID-1, COVID-2, because how long was it going to last, you know?
Damn.
And then things, you know, started to change and move forward, and it was like, okay, maybe we're moving into whatever this post world is, if you call it that. You know, people are still getting sick, but but I was like, no, I must finish. The books have to be go to COVID-19. I have that.
Oh my God.
That's this project. Okay. I must go this far. And,
Well, 19 books. Okay.
Yeah. 20, because I have a pre and then a post.
Love it. Love it. So in the spirit of all of this, like, there's just a lot of obviously thought and care that goes into your work, whether it be programming a season of art that you're going to present and music that you're going to present at Music Box Village, or in your own, like, this is like awesome, in your own artistic output.
Well, thank you.
Like, where does that come from? Like, have you always just had that kind of, have you been that kind of personality creator? Or have you learned that?
I think I've learned a lot. Just will say that, like, going to grad school when I did with the people that I did and intersecting with art school students, you can go to music school and learn to get very good at music and not think conceptually about that whatsoever.
Right.
Artists, I think, or at least like the visual artists I knew, had to write artist statements, and nobody was asking musicians to, like,
oh, that's interesting,
think about it and put it down on paper and articulate what you're doing. And I've had some incredible teachers there. Anthony Coleman was one of them, incredible piano player out of New York. And Ted Reichman and Carla Kilstedt, two other teachers that I had, and they all were just deep thinkers. And I gravitated towards that, you know, just like, what are the ideas? What is the thing behind the thing, you know? So I gravitated towards that. And then I really felt like coming to New Orleans that Jay and Delaney were doing that at Airlift. That, you know, there were these incredible shows that you were like, what am I seeing? Can I even believe that? Like,
yeah.
Trying to come up with a good example from the early days of, like, of when I got there, because I came to New Orleans, I missed the whole first and second iterations of Music Box. So I arrived right about the time we were opening the first site. But just the unlikely combinations of people together, and why is that? And what are we doing? You know, and like, I think about two different things. I think about, there was this great project my first year there, from this band Blado Zlato, and they do Bulgarian folk music in New Orleans, but they wanted to do this project that explored, the Voyager space probe and the Golden Record.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
There was a really weird story that I heard, and it was this event, right? Sounded bonkers.
Yeah. So this event explored the Golden Record, and the conceit for the show was that the Golden Record had finally been discovered by aliens on some other planet.
Wow.
And there were movement artists that were these aliens, and they would take this giant Golden Record from sonic sculpture in the village to sonic sculpture, and they would play a recording. So, for example, we have the house that is the phone booth, right? And so I'm going to describe it a little bit, but like, it's a phone and you're singing through the phone, which is coming through a loudspeaker on top of the phone booth, and it's spinning around and kind of like Doppler affecting your voice. So it's very distorted. And one of the people in the band sang the Queen of the Night aria, Mozart's Queen of the Night, out of there. So all of the tracks from the Golden Record were distorted using the musical houses, because the aliens wouldn't hear it the way we hear it. You know, the idea. Like, they would hear it in this strange and funky way. And it was so cool and so well thought out. I was so impressed by things like that.
That's got to change you. Like, that's got, like, all of this sound art and collaboration, exploration, all of it has to like fundamentally affect like you as a human, as an artist, all of it. Like you're not coming out of there the way you went in. Like it has messed you up in a perfect way, right?
Like, yeah, deeply. And you know, like I think for somebody like me too, that was in music school always, like music always felt accessible to me because I was just always doing it, but it's not for so many people.
Yeah. Nice.
So to unlearn some of that like conservatory and training world by being in the music box where there's no expert on these houses. I mean, Taylor Shepherd is an expert, you know, and you can kind of like learn over time how to activate these things, but they can be activated by anybody.
Right.
And when you see people of different ages and different backgrounds playing in that space, looking at each other, making eye contact, smiling, listening, that's where it's at, man. That's it.
I mean, 100%. Absolutely. Yeah.
So for sure it changed, you know?
Yeah. It's so nice to see it continuing and evolving. And now you're in this new role. My God, like you have strong shoulders. Eh? You're carrying a lot right now.
If you thought I had strong shoulders before. Yeah.
Well, we knew this, but like this is next level, right? So how are you feeling about whatever this chapter is? In you, like just in your career now with, I don't know, this place and, you know, I'm just excited for you, but it sounds like a big responsibility.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, some fundamental shifts are going to have to change pretty soon. We still have a very small team. Mm-hmm. And while, you know, in some ways, the move from creative director to interim executive director, it just was necessary for us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that interim will stay a part of that, you know, and we'll find somebody fantastic who has some of the admin skills that I don't, that can come and be on the team, you know, because I'd really love to see the team grow from where it is right now. But right now I have the institutional knowledge for the project and for the nonprofit and a lot of heart and a lot of passion and, you know, happy to steer the ship through this, you know, that's turbulent big period. And we're reopening in the spring.
Yes.
That feels really good to know we're going to have people back really soon.
Yeah. Yeah. It has to. Yeah. Well, congrats. That's big. I know last time we spoke about it, it was, just a challenge. So good on you. And I'm happy to hear it. Let's go back a little bit to your education. Because I ask this question of everyone I interview, because it's like, we can only get so much in our time. And I would argue that like the education continues at Music Box Village. You're taking in you're getting decades of, you can't pay no tuition for that.
No. But,
you know?
Yeah.
But like, do you have any regrets from your, it's a weird way to ask it, but I'm a negative human, you know, I'm owning it. Coming to grips with it. Do you have any regrets from your education? Like, we can't have it all. We can't get it all in that time. So like coming out of it, it sounded like you loved your time at New England Conservatory. That sounded.
You know, I did, but I felt like, it was the graduate studies that like made the big difference for me. And I realized that I would have maybe, come to some of these conclusions faster if I'd been in a more, interdisciplinary environment.
Oh.
Even if that was like double majoring at Tufts University or something, because New England Conservatory has a program with Tufts and you can take, you know, your regular liberal arts courses over there.
Oh yeah.
But it's very important that musicians are plugged into what's happening and like understand the social and political climate in which they live, I think. And, you know, you can get away with not knowing, you know, but if you're trying to make some work and digest these things, I think I wish I'd gotten there a little bit faster.
Yeah. I mean, where did you do your undergrad?
Also, at New England Conservatory.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So it was like a total of 6 years there then.
So I started off at a small liberal arts school in Western North Carolina called Brevard College. And I was also a music major there, but my minor was art history.
Oh.
And I was there for 2 years and wanted to get out of there. And I was dead set on Boston and had met a teacher up there. So I did 3 years of 3 years after that, 5 years total in undergrad, and took 2 years off. And I knew I was going back to grad school and thought, I'm out of Boston. I'll go to New York. I'll go somewhere else. And just ended up finding this program that I was really enamored with and felt really different than what was being offered at a lot of other schools. And I didn't want to give up performing. I had looked at ethnomusicology at NYU.
Wow.
And, you know, that would be a different path, and a worthy one, but I didn't want to give up performing. And a lot of the ethnomusicology students seem to be deep in the research.
It's a weird thing about ethnomusicology, not to knock any of our ethnomusicologist friends who are listening to this, but it almost seems like a prerequisite to get through it is to maybe even hang up your practice as a performer, which is a strange one.
Yeah.
And one that I know many have to fight to preserve. How was it like growing up? Were your folks supportive of your creative side? Like, does this happen accidentally, or are they there fostering your love of it?
They were pretty supportive of it. My mom is a visual artist and taught art in schools. She did everything from elementary to high, 43 years.
Dang.
Public school art teacher. Yeah.
Bravo.
I know. Big round of applause for mom.
Bravo.
She definitely was in my corner for that kind of stuff. And my grandmother she was supposed to be teaching me piano and said she had taught me the Great American Songbook. She wasn't very patient as a piano teacher, but
okay,
I was
okay.
Picking up songs very quickly. And so she just became my accompanist instead.
How fun.
Yeah, how fun. It was really fun. Wow. So, you know, they wanted me to go for that. I mean, I think at some point they were also like, maybe she'll make this other turn back towards, I don't know. I say that, but I'm like, I don't know. Did they really ever think I would do that? Did they really ever think I would, you know, make the left turn to being a doctor, or, you know, it's kind of just part of who I was. I was a good student. It wasn't like a question of that.
Yeah.
But
that's where the passion is. It's so important. Yeah. I see so many people who kind of don't feed that passion, and just like, it seems like a definite path to like, not misery, that might be laying it on a little thick, but just like not being happy with where you're, like feeding that side of who you are is crucial. And I know it's a privilege. It really is. It feels like it, especially in today's world, but it's also a necessity for us to have, you know, as much of it as possible. It's an important, it's not a frivolity either.
It's interesting to hear you say that too, because I mean, I do now somewhat question the necessity of like all of this school, you know, and I know so many incredible working artists who didn't have all the school that I had,
That's right. But they have the education. The education is there no matter whether it's formal or informal, but you're saying the formal stuff.
It worked for me. It's not necessary at the same time, you know, and
well, said Claude Debussy as well, when they interviewed him, and they're like, says the guy who has a PhD in composition, right? He was crapping on the institution after he had finished his PhD. And it's like, you know. So I hear you, and I love it. I love it.
I mean, I think it's complicated here in America too, where most people of my generation have deep student loan debt, you know, and we were told this is what we had to do because you needed to have a degree from an institution to make it in this world. And that just, you know, that doesn't quite sit the same way as it used to,
well,
you know,
industry
15
tactics.
Years ago.
Industry tactics. I mean, listen, industry tactics, like you in 2024, because like my niece and nephew are embarking on this, not to bring them. Sorry, Lou and Sophia, I'm bringing you into the podcast. But you know, like you often wonder anyone of that age, of like high school age, being fed like the same old crusty song and dance that we were all fed of, like you got to go to university or college to figure yourself out, or just maybe delay the reality of life. I don't know. I just don't see the, again, says the guy with a PhD, I don't see the value in, I just don't see the, like, if you know what you want, it's, I think we're breaking down that weirdo tradition. I'm never going to knock education though. I think it's like,
no,
it's the most beautiful thing because it can help change a mind, you know?
Yes.
But I guess there's other ways to it. And I really do appreciate the informal. If I look at someone like Taylor Shepherd, it's like, he's got one of the richest educations I've ever heard of, and I don't understand it, but it's, and it's complex. And, but I mean, come on, like it truly is the one of a kind education any of us desire, you know, I know that, like it's, so,
I mean, I think like if schools were truly set up for the diverse range of learners that they have, then maybe it would feel truly useful for everyone. But the way that it is set up, it, not everybody can vibe on it. They can't, some can't learn in that environment, you know?
Yeah.
And they need to go have real world experiences and, you know, hang out all night with, you know, somebody whose work they totally admire, which is how they did it before institutions anyway, you know?
Yeah. Yes.
So always that, always the oral tradition, all and everything, you know, and New Orleans does that so well.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, like I got someone posted the second line for Fat Man, and I watched that entire, it was like, I don't know how many hours it was, but it was like being there, and it was like, it's like, there's no, and then I just watched the parade for one of our silly prime ministers who just passed away, and they gave him like a state funeral. And it's like, man, you may be rich, but you ain't rich like that. Like the New Orleans second line is like, it was like it, that way more, first of all, way more people were out there because the love is greater, but it's a different beast. There's so much going on in that city. It really is a magical place, you know? So look, I want to ask you about we were talking a little bit about the regret, but you brought up a notion that's really, I think, important in your work, and I see it in everything that you do, but the social aspect, the kind of the why you do what you do as a musician, as a creator, as a curator, the whole thing, like, can you speak a little bit about that, of like the, because I don't know if you didn't really speak to it as a regret, so thank you for doing that. But I think I got what you meant by like being prepared, being informed, being Did I get that right? Yeah.
Right, and I think that it's really been in the last couple of years that I've had the opportunity to work alongside artists who are thinking very deeply about the present moment that they're in. And of course, positionality comes to play in like who they are and what their perspective is. Mm-hmm. But I think it's so powerful and so important. I mean, I'm just thinking about this project we did with Lonnie Holly a few years back, you know, where, we decided we were going to make a new musical monument for the village using his artwork. And it's this incredible aluminum eagle that has faces cut out in it. And it's inside of a cage. And it's called The Sound of Freedom in Captivity. And Lonnie had made, had made a body of work of found objects before that, that you can see it. There's a video called I Woke Up in a Effed Up America. That is really, he is somebody who is this outsider Southern artist tradition. He's been making art his whole life to make sense of his life, to heal some deep trauma and stuff that he went through. And just working with someone like that, who's on a different level, you know? And I'm not, you know, how many times have I sung a song just because it felt good to sing a song that day, you know? Like, it's fine to work on that level too. But I think when you work with people who are just really thinking deeply about how the work can resonate and connect with another person, you see it, it's powerful, you know, like the idea that we need to make new monuments as we're tearing down these Confederate monuments. And like,
That's awesome.
It's incredible. Awesome. You know,
is that what kind of was behind that? The idea of tearing down statues and creating a new monument. That's so heavy. That didn't even hit me till now. Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So it's been great to work on projects like that with people who are really thinking deeply about it. And
and enabling something like that, just to be in the mix of like bringing something like that so special to life is like, you got to be proud of that, you know?
Definitely.
Thank you.
It's my, I mean, it's my pleasure. I feel so lucky to be a part of the work. And I believe in it. I really do think that, you know, art can connect people and can forge understanding, and because sometimes it bewilders people and it catches them off guard. So they don't have enough time to like overlay their political, you know, whatever on it. They can just be in wonder for a moment. And maybe in that begin to understand something else about someone, you know?
There you go.
I mean, I've been a part of some incredible projects over the last couple of years, and it really has changed the way I've thought about it and pushed me to make work that is, it's just thinking more deeply about these things. You know, I'm working on a project right now that, you know, it started out as a release show for this EP. And then I was I was like, I don't feel like playing these like really intimate songs in a bar.
Okay.
But four tunes isn't really going to cut it for something.
Yeah.
So I just started dreaming on it. And, you know, here we are. And 2.5 weeks, I open a theater piece. With like some reflections from that time. It's really become a meditation on separation and longing from that time in the pandemic.
Where will you do that? That sounds exciting. That's amazing.
There's a spot called Kanoa. That's the old, Taekwondo dojo on, St. Claude near Music Box Village. And, it's run by these two great guys, Tomas and, Jebny Lewis. Jebny, you might've met through. So they're getting this space up and running, and, I needed a room that wasn't a room that I run. I was like, let me go be the artist in the room.
There's something about that.
And I have a couple of people on a team, that a musical director and a lighting director, so that I can just be performing the show.
Do you, now that you like, I feel that you've played the role at, you've done what you're doing at Music Box, and now bringing it back to like your own, like, are you different now when you like, just in terms of the framing of the way you said that, right? Like you can be, you can be the artist a little stronger, a little more, like has it changed you as an artist being like working the other side too? And it's all the same side for me. Like it's all, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. And
presenting.
I do know what you mean. It is the same side, but
when the presenter becomes presented, or when the presenter presents. Never mind, I'm going to stop. But
well,
you know
when
I mean.
when you wear a lot of other hats, and you know what it looks like to be the producer and have all of that, or be the director, or be the educator, mm-hmm. whatever it is. Mm-hmm. If you, I don't know, now that I'm like doing my own work, I'm just seeing it from 1,000 feet and I'm like, yeah, I can't yeah. hold all of these pieces. Yeah. I want to have somebody else to hold this and this good, because good. I would good, like good. To just show up and not be thinking about the sound system today, you know, and like not be thinking about how playback is going to happen on this thing. I would like to
there
just...
There you go.
Be in the moment of it, you know? Like, this is, we need audio engineers. How many shows have you done when you were like, especially starting out, where you set up all the gear yourself?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you checked it, and then you're in the middle of the set, and something's sounding really messed up, and you can't do anything about it because you're also performing.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're kind of like distracted, and you're like maybe trying to futz with it a little bit. But no,
that's cool.
Yes, if you can have a team. Again, so, privileged thing, but you know.
Well, hey, work towards it. And that's exciting. And you also know how to, I think, come in not as a diva, but as appreciative, not taking that for granted and being like just loving with the entire everyone who's supporting that what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, they're all my collaborators.
Right? Yes. Like it's 100%. It's so beautiful. And building trust with people and after every project, it just, I don't know, gets a little stronger in what it is, you know? People understand what you're trying to do a little more with each one of these, you know? So that's what you're up to. I was going to ask, what are your longer term, as we kind of finish, wrap up, where do you want to go with all this? Do you know? Like, I asked Kid Koala and he said he's got, forget about a 5-year plan. He's like, I got a 7-year plan now because of the trajectory. Wow. So, you know, it's bonkers.
Wow.
Go back and listen to that episode, gentle listeners. But like, how do you think about your, are you thinking to get to this release and then kind of take a breather and figure it out? Like, how do you map things out in the way that you work?
Yeah, I know that there is, it's so funny you said this thing about, and I'd forgotten the name you said, but I want to go back and listen to the interview, but about these 4-song chunks, right? Because I definitely am like, there's another 4-song EP that is ready to be, to start being worked on once the show is done. It's just scraps of songs that are ready to, you know, be fleshed out. But the theater piece is the first time I have done anything like that for myself.
Wow.
I'm terrified.
Yeah, yeah. Good.
Which is good. The good terror, you know?
Me too. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Terrified. And I'm documenting it. And the way I'm setting it up is 30 seats, 3 nights. Mm. So I'll get to do it a few times to love a small audience because it's an intimate thing. And so I will be changed on the other side of that. And I don't actually know just yet how, but I suspect that there will be more that I want to do in this vein. Cool. So I'm like, there'll be a body of work.
Yeah.
So now I can like figure out how to fund it via grants I'm ready to dig in with my own stuff. And it's been a minute.
That's great. Well, and I feel that, just from having paid attention to what you've been up to since I've known you, it's been like, I feel like this is like, you're having a moment in terms of like figuring that out and incorporating that into the bigger picture of who you are, you know, which is exciting. And I like that. I used to think that it was really cool that Kid Koala had a 7-year plan. I still do. Kid Koala is, there's no one else. Right?
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Master.
But I do kind of like the, like almost like a little animal. Like you go, you find your food, chew, 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 figure it out, right? We're squirrels.
Yeah. I think I'll go over there now.
I'm not a boar. I don't know what koala is. I'm not a koala. But yeah, like this idea of like small chunks, figure it out, process, kind of, you don't need to know it all. In fact, who the heck does? I don't know. It doesn't confine you. I'm not saying don't have a plan. I'm just saying, or long, bigger vision. I always used to think it was like all about that, like grandiose vision. Sure. But there's also the learning as you go. That's so important to all this that you, because you don't take those beautiful wrong turns. You talked about celebrating mistakes earlier.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of all this, I think.
I think it is too. And you gotta try something to know, you know, like this may not work for me. I don't know. I gotta try it to know. I have other things in my mind that here's how I would maybe do a second iteration that looks more like a visual installation, less like a theater piece, you know, like there's a path that that I'm on, but I guess I feel like in terms of charting it, like years, man, the last few years have just told me,
don't do that. Ain't no
good
tether.
Luck. Yeah. You get there when you get there.
Yeah.
And I think that is, you get there when you get there is really like how you make a life in music, you know?
And you're getting there.
It's not done. Yeah. It's all, we're always going to be
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope so. Until the day that I'm like decrepit and, you know, maybe then I'm still making, I hope I'm making sound.
You know, I was at a conference and it was all kinds of different musicians with different disabilities. And it was so, I was weeping because just is that reminder that, you know, you can have whatever situation you're in, you can get it out. You can make the music happen. Right. So that it was so just like,
that's profound.
You know, I was, just blown away by it. And I kind of always knew that even on my end, and God forbid, but like, you'd be that like kind of Monty Python sketch where it's like, even with like whatever you've got, you just make the music happen, you know? And that's kind of, I just, you know, so amen to being decrepit and still creating and just like getting it out, expressing yourself if you have something to say, you know?
Yeah. And I've found that like in the last couple of years, those artists that are still making music or those voices that are, you know, the thing about the voice is you can actually, you take care of your voice and sing for a really long time. You know, it deepens and it changes. Yeah. And man, I love the way Joni Mitchell sounds now.
Oh my God.
She's not like doing all of these acrobatics, but it's lived in and it's so like wise and it moves you in a different way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I love those voices.
Amen. Well, thank you. This has been delightful. I wish you, when is the theater piece happening? What, if people are listening, we'll try to get this out ASAP. So,
April 10, 11, and 12th.
Okay. I will be so thinking soon. Of you. Okay. Yeah. You've got this. Do you have to memorize lines?
I do. I do. Okay. But there, I have a conceit. I have a gesture. There's the journals on the stage. So if, you know,
there we go. There we
go. If all else fails, there is something I can read from.
Okay. So, okay.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy every moment and thank you for sharing. What do you want to go out with?
Let's listen to Amend.
Here It Comes Now. And that's from the new record.
That's from the new record, yeah.
Before, During, Still. This is Amend. And where can people learn more about your work? There's a Bandcamp, right?
There's a Bandcamp for the By and By record.
Yes.
Yeah. We're on Otto Roper Records. And the record's called Time Slips Away. Right now, I'm using my Instagram as kind of my home for all things musical. And it's at Leah Hennessy with just one H. But website to come.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so
much. All
your
streaming services have it as well. So.
All right. Well, you take care. This has been fun.
Thanks so much. Good to see you. Yeah,
you too.
Amen. Thank you for the silence.
Let it settle before you speak. I know you think there's more, some amendment we might reach, but that won't make it fair. That won't make it right. Retreat.
Well, wasn't that beautiful? That was Amend from Before, During, Still, out soon from Leah Hennessy. And if you're in the New Orleans area, April 10th, 11th, and 12th at 4210 St. Claude Street, get out there and support. Seems like an amazing show that Leah's putting on right now in New Orleans. So check that out for the next three nights if you're listening live. And if not, go to Leah Hennessy on Instagram and make sure you get that new EP, Before, During, Still. Thank you so much, Leah. And thank you, gentle listener, for your support. To learn more about my work and what we're up to with the podcast and other, go to friendlyrich.com. And we'll see you again very soon on Industry Tactics. Bye for now. Take care.